I've shared this story with some of you, but it's been a while, and it's become the gospel according to Dell for me, so I'll say it again, and that is that I used to have a job that I didn't like very much. That was when I served as a pastor in Rhode Island of a church as associate pastor. It was, fell upon me to go to the rehab center, assisted living center, memory unit nearby my church, and to preach in the memory unit, mostly to people who had serious, very serious dementia issues. And I always struggled with what to say and how I could say it, that a word might fall on a person so that they could hear it. And it was sometimes frustrating to me because it felt like it didn't really matter what I said. Maybe it mattered that I was standing there, but I never got the feedback that you get with others that are sitting in the pews, as you can see how the words fall on them. Although every once in a while I could see on someone's face this sense of rapture that either I, my presence, or whatever words I was saying really hitting the spot. A moment, and it may just be a flash and then gone. It might have been a word that stuck for a minute and then it was gone. But I would see this very childlike expression of complete awe. It was very satisfying. And when I was greeting people as they filed out, as they always did, somebody was shepherding them and they would go by and shake my hand. A woman towards the end of the line said to me, "You are the best." And you know, we all like to hear that, right? And it was like such good and rewarding feedback for me, who thought that my words really weren't heard there. And I was kind of basking in that for a minute. My ego took up and stood up and took a bow. And then she turned to the person behind her in the line and said with a barely disguised stage whisper, "I tell that to all of them." And so in a moment, I went from the highest heights to the bottom of I was just one of many. But I reflected on that since then, and I believe that that woman with a very severe case of dementia was God incarnate that day for me, telling me what I believe God says to all of us: you are the best, and you are the best, and you are the best, and you are the best. We are all the best in God's eyes. And so I'm very grateful for her words, and I think back to that moment where I was for a moment the best. It's hard to feel like you're the best when you're a pastor, because you may have great worship services, but there's always somebody who's mad at you, or, you know, you've hurt their feelings, or maybe you've actually done something that, you know, has offended them. And so I remember that very fondly, and I can identify very well with Jesus' disciples arguing among themselves about who was the best. I've been to some clergy gatherings where in our first years of meeting together as the Tucson UCC clergy, it seemed like what we were about was really an argument about who was the best. Well, I have this program. Well, I did this thing. And we weren't really sharing our hearts with each other and allowing ourselves to be vulnerable. Only when we finally did allow ourselves to be vulnerable with each other did we get to know each other and love each other and trust each other even more. Jesus' teaching of his followers this morning is about discipleship. In Mark's gospel, the word that is the most important word is following. For Jesus, discipleship is following Jesus, following Jesus. For Matthew, it's teaching or learning. I'm not sure what it is for Luke. I think maybe healing. And for John's gospel, it's believing. But John's gospel is the last, so you have to go through all these other actions before you actually get to what's up here. And so his disciples have been showing up. They've been following him on the road. We know that he's been in Tyre and Sidon, where he met the obstreperous Syrophoenician woman, and then he went on to the Decapolis, and he healed the man who was profoundly deaf. And then he traveled on and healed some more people, and gradually, as the authorities began to hear about him and what he was doing, no matter how much he tried to keep it quiet, they came to hate him and to fear him. And he was very much aware of that. So in public, he was one person, and he was doing ministry. And in private, he would pull his disciples to one side and teach them. And so when he says to them the second time in Mark's gospel, that I will be apprehended by those who hate and fear me and executed, and that in 3 days I will rise. Oh my God, it was just too much for them to imagine. I mean, in the first place, he'd only been with them for a year, maybe a couple of years. He only had 3 years in ministry before he was executed. He couldn't be gone that soon. I mean, you call a pastor, you hope they stay at least 10 years, don't you? And here he's telling them that not only was he not going to stay for 10 years, that he was going to be executed. And then the other piece, that he would rise in 3 days. And I want to pay attention to that particular thing because they just couldn't wrap their minds around that. It's really not a teaching that's easy to wrap our minds around, and I think we only really understand what resurrection means when the worst has happened to us, and we think that we'll never be able to get up and go on again. And then God, in and through people or nature or all the different ways God comes to us as angels and advocates, lifts us up and helps us to go on. Maybe his disciples hadn't had those kind of experiences yet, so they couldn't imagine that Jesus' execution could end in anything but bad news. And so they, instead of asking him the hard questions about, well, what do you mean? And if something happens to you, what's going to happen to us? And if that happens to you, is that going to happen to us? Instead, they were quiet, as many of us are when we're afraid to hear the answer, right? We know as parents, sometimes we really don't want to know the answer, so we don't ask the question. Yeah, that's a hard thing to do. And the disciples are kind of like the Keystone Cops, you know, in Mark's gospel particularly. It gives us some consolation that they just don't get it right most of the time. And so as we come to church and as we go through our life, you know, it's a bit comforting that we're kind of like them. But this is also a deadly serious situation that Jesus is calling them to think about. And so he talks to them about what discipleship means. And I think that's every bit of what David White is writing about, that Jesus always calls his disciples, us, to go just beyond ourselves, to go just a little bit farther. The rich young man that comes to Jesus and says, how can I obtain eternal life? Look, I've done all these things. And he's got his list. You know, I did all these things that are required of faithful people. And Jesus says, well, good, now go and give away all your possessions to the poor. And the rich young man walks away dejected. Well, Jesus is asking the young man to go beyond himself. Jesus asked us to go beyond our titles, beyond our to-do lists, beyond our jobs, beyond this structure that we've built, this identity that we've built up as who we are, to move inside and look at what's inside of us and how what's inside of us meets that distant spot on the horizon where the roads come together. And that, David White says, when you see that, when you feel that, you know that that's where you must go, which is a definition of calling, which is a definition of following. It's not sometimes that we want to go or we're really thrilled about going, but it means we can't not go. The primary focus of this passage is the renunciation of dominance, which has been a big part of Jesus' ministry from the beginning. When he sends his disciples out, he sends them two by two, and he says, take only what you've got on your body. Don't take your toothbrush, your electric toothbrush. Don't take your iPhone. You know, all those things that make us, your curling iron, those things that make us look like the people we want to and smell like the people that we want to look and smell like. Just go as you are and go into a home and stay there unless they reject you, and then wipe the dust off your sandals and go on to the next house. Jesus calls us to be vulnerable. Our book Bible study group is looking at the turning of the church where almost immediately after Jesus' execution, many in the new church that was forming said, oh, no, 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 this isn't a church of people made poor. This is not a church of the riffraff and the rebel rousers. This is not a church of the child. This is a church that appeals to people of wealth and power. And that was part of the appropriation of the church of Jesus Christ, or of the Jesus who lived and walked on the earth, to the Roman Empire, right, to Greek culture and practice, and certainly as part of the church today. And you know, we all know of those churches that are gorgeous and they have huge budgets and their pastors make a lot of money and they drive a Mercedes around, but they're not really walking the walk of Jesus, just talking the talk of Jesus. Jesus takes a child and holds the child and says, whenever you welcome one of these, you welcome me. My heart aches when I read today's gospel story, especially in light of the current dramas playing out in our world. What are children learning from the news played out on TV and social media and the classroom and the dinner table? The disciples are constantly fighting over who's the greatest. Children are learning that bullies win and that certain lives don't matter, that they have no rights to good schools and health care, safety, and just the right to be a child, to play. It appears that Jesus has left the room and the disciples are in charge, and they, like those in today's story, have turned their backs on the core practice of Mark's Jesus, to follow Jesus, to follow Jesus, to do what Jesus does, not just to believe or show up, but do what he did. On the face of it, his tender gesture is so small and so straightforward, it's easy to miss its import. It's like the children's message that we have at the beginning of church. Oh, isn't that sweet, sometimes people say. But does it matter to the children? What's the message behind the children's message? What does it mean for me to call the children up to sit with me and to learn with me and to learn from them? Consider how radical a teaching this actually is for the disciples and for us today, especially given what's going on in the world. True greatness, Jesus says, is not to be above others, but to be least of all and servant of all. It's not to ascend to the social ladder, but rather to descend it, taking the lowest place. It's not to seek the company of the powerful, but to welcome and care for those without status, such as the child that Jesus embraces and places before his disciples. Jesus doesn't say, welcome the child, because it's a loving or kind or ethical or socially beneficial thing to do. He says, do you want to see what God actually looks like? Do you want to find God's stand-in hidden right here among us? Are you curious about the truest nature of divine power and greatness? Ministry for Jesus is all about relationship with God and self and other. Are you giving priority to recognizing and nurturing and protecting the God-given potential in children? Welcome the child, not idealizing, not pampering or favoring one child over another, but welcoming all children is essential to the practice of following Jesus. Mark's, whoever welcomes a child welcomes me, echoes Matthew's, the truth is, as often as you neglected to do this, to feed, to clothe, to hunt, to liberate, to comfort, to one of the least of these, you neglected to do it to me. Reflecting on these words this week, I think back to my experience ministering with the children of Southwest Key. In 2016 and 17, I was asked to pastor what started to be about 35 children and then grew to be several hundred children, Protestant children, at the Southwest Key Detention Center for Undocumented and Unaccompanied Minors. So children from 5 years old to 17 years old would come into worship with me once a week, and I would have a worship service in Spanish, and I would preach to them liberating theology that actually tells the story of God made manifest in and through people made poor's lives. And we would sing songs, and we always sang the same songs, not hymns that the kids were so familiar with, but popular culture songs that grabbed the kids by the neck, you know, and said, yes, go deeper to be with God. And so we would sing these songs together and raise the roof. But I was so aware of this tenuous connection between what I did there and what I did here, ministering with children who had left their homes because they'd seen a sibling murdered or a parent murdered or a parent or a sibling extorted or sexual assault or murder of a sibling, a sister, a brother, all kinds of activities that does not allow them to be children where they are, does not even allow them to live as children where they are. threatens to eradicate future profits for generations to come. And so their parents bring them to the border, and we're going to sing a song later that we sang in 2014 when we started seeing this phenomenon of children, undocumented children, flooding our borders. And what did we do? We created detention centers for them that got bigger and bigger and bigger, and I finally left because the children there had been in detention for so long that they knew the rules and they knew how to break them. And there were people who came to worship who didn't really care about worship. What they'd learned was to resist and to be disruptive. And I honored that, but I found myself wanting to take a hold of a couple of them and tell them, you know, to behave themselves. And I couldn't do this because these were prisoners. And yes, they were going to school, and yes, they were being fed, but did they have a bed check at night with a flashlight in their eyes? Did they have to follow a regimen? Did they get shuttled around to different detention centers, never knowing when they or their friends would be moved, which happened all the time? Yes. And I was there as their pastor, and I realized that there was no way that I could effectively pastor them anymore. But as I left the shelter every time and came back to our church, I wondered how I could bring this situation to you. Because you couldn't go there. A few of you were lucky enough to go in with me in the beginning, but as soon as they began being more careful about security, which they still aren't very careful about, according to the papers this week, Southwest Key is being shut down because of security practices there. I couldn't take people in anymore. So was just telling the story, objectifying these kids, was it enough? That was the beginning of my doctoral project, and we had three different short mission programs where people actually went and met them and heard the stories of these children and their parents and felt in their body what it was like to experience the migrant Christ on the border. Because of that, friends, we have our hospitality program, which I wrote about in our newsletter this week, where we have three people in care now, where our church took a vow to offer emergency hospitality to people who are at risk and vulnerable in the Tucson community in greater southern Arizona area. That means a whole lot of things, but it means, yes, there is room in the inn. We've already gone beyond what we thought our capacity was. We're already helping three people. When we begin to help one, we have a family whose lives it's profoundly changed, and our lives have been changed in relationship with these people. And it's not just one kind of person who is threatened. It's recognizing that as the days of this administration go on, there are more and more and more people who face the urgent need for hospitality. And so, yes, all the commentaries say, children teach us so much. They're sent to teach us to honor our imagination. They're sent to embody enthusiasm, to teach us to ask the hard questions, to teach us to trust God's abundance. Yes, but we are called to learn from them more than they are called to be our teachers. We are called to see and hear and act in solidarity with them, so that all of children will be able to reach their God-given potential. Children embody for us, as Jesus and for Jesus, God made manifest, not as a ruler riding on the back of a stallion or in a stretched Mercedes-Benz, but in a tiny, dependent, vulnerable child who needs us to survive and thrive, upon whom our future rests. We have a responsibility to children also to be their teachers, to show them with our life work what it looks like to follow Jesus, not just to stick them in a Sunday school class and hope it works, but to live out the life of following Jesus, which someday, friends, means just to show up and come to church because maybe someone else needs to see you that day. And maybe sometimes it means volunteering for the hospitality program, going beyond yourself in a way you've never thought you might do. Whatever human hierarchies and rankings we cling to, Jesus upends them as he holds a tiny child in his arms. Do we want to be in relationship with God? Then be in relationship with the child abandoned in the alleyway. Be in relationship with the child in detention at the U.S. border. Be in relationship with the child who's been molested by a priest. be in relationship with the child dying of gunshot wounds in his kindergarten classroom, be in relationship with the child of a parent who is trafficking that child, be in relationship with the child who can't access health care and education or dinner, walk alongside the child drowning in anxiety and depression, listen to the weak, the small, the simple, the vulnerable, and the helpless. Look to the ones who are not in charge. Look at the tiniest faces to see God. In the coming weeks, may we say to the child inside of us and to each child in the world the words of Rumi, "You were born with potential. You were born with goodness and trust. You were born with ideals and dreams. You were born with greatness. You were born with wings. You are not meant for crawling, so don't. You have wings. Learn to use them and fly." Amen.